Once upon a time, there were four little rabbits.
How old are you, Johnny? She asked.
16.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times.
A wise old king once said, "Of the making of books, there is no end." How true today. Of the overabundance of writing published each year, what's worth reading? The answer is simple. Read only the best. Come join the discussion on Just the Best Literature.
Well, hello again, everyone. Thanks for listening in today. Well, I don't have any comments today, and that's probably a good thing. Well, I am back in the studio this week. I'm ready to dive into the book Hero by Michael Korda. Last week, I decided to rerun the teen panel program on reading because it was so popular. I did think we should just go ahead and run it again. But it also gave me some time to catch up on some necessary writing. Besides doing this podcast, I think many of you know that I teach college-level English literature and Shakespeare here at Herbert W. Armstrong College. But I also write for the Royal Vision and the Philadelphia Trumpet magazines. And I also write for thetrumpet.com, and along with some other special projects. Now, just recently, I completed a multi-month special project on a new child-rearing booklet titled Child Rearing with Vision. Now, what this book is, it is a compilation of articles from the Trumpet, from the Royal Vision, and it's a compilation from the editorial staff of their writing. There's sections in there from a major work by Herbert W. Armstrong, and there's also a section in there from a major work by Mr. Gerald Fleury. Now, I just want to say, again, it's putting all of this together made for a really great little booklet. And if you're a parent with young children, I think you'll find this booklet very helpful in raising your children, but it does have a very strong biblical perspective. Now, this book is free to you upon request at thetrumpet.com. You can also download it there as well. And so, again, it's just a great little book. I will be putting out some more tweets about it. And so, again, I just think you'd really, really get a lot out of it. Now, if you have not started reading Hero, I just want to tell you, do not miss the opportunity. It really is a fascinating and it's a thrilling book. Now, by saying that, I don't mean it's not challenging. And I always try to read the introductions to a book first, and I found the introduction a little challenging. Then also now, we're going to dig into chapter one today, and it's really challenging as well. Now, I did some thinking about this, and I think the reason why this book is a challenge is because we're not familiar with the vital history it contains. And again, this really is a book of history. And of course, you know, at the Trumpet, at the trumpet.com, even Mr. Gerald Fleury has had a recent program on the importance of history, and I think we're just all so lacking in knowledge of history. And that's why I think the book gets challenging in the beginning. But then once you really get into it and begin to grasp it and understand it, I mean, it really gets exciting. Now, I think the history of the book is the most important part of this book. And in fact, I think we will understand the current Middle East tension and coming crisis better after reading this book. And I have to be honest, I don't think I understand the Middle East tension as much as I should, but I'm just gaining an understanding just having read through the first couple sections of the book. Now, Mr. Herbert Armstrong, he told the church often to watch the Middle East, and really, all you listeners out there and all you people that love to read books, how can we watch the Middle East if we don't understand it? I was able to pull a quote out from The Plain Truth, and this is a article by Mr. Armstrong. It's actually one of his personals, and this was from the October-November 1980, The Plain Truth. And the subtitle of this article is Old Jerusalem, New Capital for State of Israel, or Should It Be an International City? what prophecy says will now happen. And so Mr. Armstrong always encouraged us to put our thoughts in our minds and focus on what's happening in the Middle East. Here's what he says. No spot on earth is as fraught with explosive international tension as the old city of Jerusalem. It is now a powder keg, which could be loaded with nuclear potential. It is the religious shrine of three major religions. It is the city that God chose, and therefore that is emotionally and violently a center of contention between religions and nations of this world. And so this book, Hero, is, I think it's critically important that we understand it to get the history. And if you look at it, the world's attention, I think, every day is being drawn more and more to the Middle East. And, of course, in America now, there's a lot of news media just hung up on supposedly these personal attacks on President Trump. But even that, I think, is going to diminish somewhat here in the next certainly in the next few years, because even the other day it came out pretty clearly. This is even from MSNBC, that they have not found anything after 2 years of investigation. They have found no evidence of collusion between President Trump and the Russians. And so maybe we can finally put that to bed and get on to some better world news like what's happening in the Middle East. Now, I don't think I understood this well until I started reading the book. But it really was the personal effort of T.E. Lawrence, or Lawrence of Arabia, Winston Churchill, other British leaders, along with key Arabic leaders that shaped the Middle East as it is today. And there's so much I did not know, and I really did, start to really dig into it. I had to do some background reading. I'm going to share some of that with you today. But I'll certainly be explaining more of this as we move through the book. I think you're going to find that this book, Hero, really does tie in with our biography of Winston Churchill. And they really did work together on this Middle East situation. They really did shape it to where it is today. Now, so for the next just several programs, we will concentrate on Chapter 1. And the Chapter 1 title is, Who is this extraordinary pipsqueak? And so I think that's actually very humorous, but it just shows about maybe the character and the personality of Lawrence of Arabia, and certainly we're going to get into this. But I did not know he was only 5'5". He was a very, very short man, but I'll tell you, in terms of being a hero, he cast a big shadow. So let me just read you the first paragraph of page 1. And I think if you're going to really understand this book, you need to get some necessary background. And I'm talking about historic background. Now, again, the book is the book is set around World War I. Now, that's, in some of the events of the book are over 100 years ago. And so that is history we don't know about anymore. And certainly it was not history I was taught in, high school. And I think it probably was taught at one time more in Britain than it is today. And so we've talked about that many times at The Trumpet and thetrumpet.com about how, there is this real move to get away from history and not study history. And I'll tell you, it's really destroying our nation. It's a nation-destroying thinking to not read history. Okay, so here's what Korda opens Chapter 1. It says, in the third summer of the world's greatest war, a small garrison of Turkish soldiers still held the port of Aqaba on the Red Sea as they had from the beginning, indeed since long before the beginning of this war. For Aqaba, the site of Elath during biblical times and later garrisoned during the Roman era by the 10th Legion, had been part of the Ottoman Empire for centuries, steadily declining under Turkish rule into a small, stifling hot place hardly bigger than a fishing village, reduced by 1917 to a few crumbling houses made of whitewashed dried mud brick and a dilapidated old fort facing the sea. So when I read that paragraph, I thought, wow, there's a lot of things I don't understand here. And I thought it was interesting that Aqaba, which is now today probably a big resort city on, on the Red Sea, and it's probably changed dramatically. But look at the history that Korda covers in just a sweep. He talks about the Bible time. He talks about Aqaba having been the site of Elath during biblical times. He talks about, the Roman Empire and the 10th Legion being there. He talks about the Ottoman Empire. And now, as we open the book, the British are there. And so it is. There's this sweeping, part of history. And one thing that I did right away is I did not really, understand the details of the Ottoman Empire. And I'd like to suggest to you that if you can get to your library, that you might go and see if you can find an Encyclopedia Britannica, because they have a huge section in that encyclopedia on the Ottoman Empire. And I do think it's important that you understand this and understand what's coming together here during World War I. The Ottoman Empire, and this is just one paragraph out of that Encyclopedia Britannica, it says, the Ottoman Empire, says, an empire created by Turkish tribes in Anatolia that lasted from the decline of the Byzantine Empire in the 14th century until the establishment of Turkey as a republic in 1922. And so there's a lot of history there. But the point I think that we need to understand for the purposes of this book is that prior to World War I, the Ottoman Empire still controlled all the land that we would call, let's say, Jordan today, the nation of Jordan, or Saudi Arabia, certainly where Israel is today, and that's the tiny nation of Judah and Jerusalem. The Arabic nations there are today, like, Qatar and, Bahrain, all of these were under the Ottoman Empire at one time. And now the Ottoman Empire is just reduced to the little nation today, to the nation today of Turkey. And of course, we'll talk about this maybe in some other programs, that the biblical origin of these peoples. And we have to remember that the Arabic peoples that we have today, they did come from Abraham's son Ishmael by his concubine Hagar, and then also the people in Turkey today come from Jacob's son Esau, who married one of Ishmael's daughters, and so they're all tied together in that sense. So these are peoples that are there, and of course the Jews are one of the nations of the Israelites. And of course, the British were involved, in the Middle East, heavily in organizing the Middle East, and establishing, Israel, the tiny nation of Judah today, as a nation. And of course, they're from the tribe of Joseph, or they're Ephraim. And of course, in America, we are Manasseh from the Bible. And so look at the history here. And so we must understand the history. Now, the reason why the Ottoman Empire is important for this book is at the time of World War I, I think maybe we could just say this. When people think of World War I, they mostly think of World War I as Britain, Germany, and France in the trenches in Europe. But there was another side to World War I. And the British were also fighting in the Middle East. And it is directly related to the Ottoman Empire. Now, when World War I began, Russia was somewhat in decline. And, the Ottoman Empire sided with the Germans. And so they sided with those Central Powers. And so there was actually war between the Ottoman Empire and Britain. And the war that was taking place in the Middle East at this time was radically different than the one that was happening in World War One. So what we need to kind of begin to pull together for you in this book is that here, Winston Churchill, we know, was fighting in the trenches in World War One, but T.E. Lawrence, or Lawrence of Arabia, was fighting in the Middle East for Britain. And of course, what the whole goal of Britain at that time was to unite the Arabic tribes, which are just victims of this terrible infighting, but to unite the Arabic tribes to revolt against the Ottoman Empire. And so that's the history behind all this that we don't see, and I didn't see until I began to look at this book. And I think so many of us, we just accept, well, Turkey's a nation and it exists. But we realize that Turkey was established because of the decline of a major empire. The Ottoman Empire did assume a lot, a big section of the old Roman Empire. And so there's all these things at play. And essentially, Britain wanted to free the Arabic peoples from the control of the Ottoman Empire. But ultimately, what Britain was after, they wanted to have great influence in the Middle East to keep Germany away from the Middle East, and especially things like the Suez Canal. That's still a very important sea gate. And of course, Britain at one time really controlled it, and now Iran is after it. There's still this tension and wanting to control the Suez Canal, because you can really control major economies, and it certainly will be a threat to Europe if Iran would get control, of the Suez Canal and prevent oil shipments going into Europe. So we know all that, and we've discussed that. On thetrumpet.com, certainly in The Trumpet, and it's just things that we need to be watching. And it's just critical that you understand more about the Ottoman Empire, and it's also you need to understand how the Middle East was put together. And so here's the point again, and I'll just repeat myself, is that Lawrence, T.E. Lawrence, had a key role. And maybe even more than his superiors, he had a key role in uniting these tribes. And that's really the thrust of the book. That's what Lawrence was all about when he was working in the Middle East. And I did give you some of his background in the last two programs. And he was a very bright young man. But the whole thrust, and it comes out here in chapter one, is that he was hunting for an Arab leader that had the charisma, that had the, let's say, the knowledge and the wisdom, and had the force of character to be able to unite the Arabic tribes. And that was a challenge. There's so much in this chapter about Lawrence that we'll get into, that we need to understand that in many ways they were hunting for an Arabic man that could do this, when really the most qualified man to unite these tribes turned out to be, well, Lawrence of Arabia. And again, he was British. But again, if we go all the way back and you look at the biblical significance of it, I mean, he's also from that tribe of Joseph, or he's Ephraimite. Or you could also go back that he's got the same, patriarch father, Abraham. And these Arabic nations go back the same way. They have the same, common ancestor, Abraham. And so it really becomes fascinating when you really get into the story. I think that the other thing that you need to do is, besides the historic background, you need to understand the geography of the Middle East. Not only just to know the position, let's say, in the world. If you look at the way Jerusalem is set, it's almost like in the center of the earth. so that all these nations have had to come in contact with it. You know, the tiny state of Israel at one time was influenced by the Greeks, then it was influenced by the Romans. And even at the time of Christ, you know, even Pontius Pilate, when Christ was crucified, he had a sign put on the stake that said, you know, here is Jesus of Nazareth, the King of the Jews. And he put it in Latin, Hebrew, and Greek. And so it's this, it seems like all these nations, you know, flowed through there. Of course, Egypt went through there. You know, a lot of Jews that became Christians came from Alexandria. That's in Egypt. Somewhere in Antioch, which is, you know, in the Arabic Arabic lands. And so it's just really, really important that we understand that. But also, I think if you want to know the greatness of the story of Lawrence, you need to understand the environment and the geography. And I don't know if you can use those words interchangeably or not, but I think you can. But you really need to understand the challenges that Lawrence had in, you know, if you've ever been to England and you knew he came from that environment, and then you put him in the desert, and the Middle Eastern deserts are amazing. You could see where I think it's incredible what he was able to accomplish, and he didn't seem to mind it. He didn't seem to mind the heat of the desert, and in fact, he has kind of a romantic relationship with the desert. If you just go to page 22, there's a lot of discussion in here about you know, the clothing of the Bedouin, and I know that that Lawrence, you know, he did not mind wearing, you know, the clothing of the Bedouin. He wore the I don't know if I'm saying this right, kafaya, which was you know, the headdress, and that was usually you know, it was a big square cloth that you put over your head, and then they had either a you know, goat hair or leather strap that kept it on their head, and he didn't mind wearing the robes. It was really great. It was really you know, great dress for the desert, and I guess a lot of the other British soldiers did not like it, and in fact, they would put the headdress on top of their straw hats, which just made them a joke to the Arabic people, you know, because they'd be on their camels. And can you imagine the scene of having a British, hat, and then you put the tablecloth, you shouldn't really call it a tablecloth, but you put the square of cloth over top of that hat, and then you try and attach it all on, and then you get on a camel and you ride, and it looked, you know, it looked like a picnic table bouncing, I guess. So anyway, not to be cause any racial slurs against the Arabic peoples, but Lawrence just he fit into it all. He saw the advantage of it all, and he didn't find anything strange about the dress. In fact, he found it to be cool and sensible, and it did protect him from the sun. And it could just be unbearable. But here's what Corda says on page 22 and 23 about, you know, working in the desert. And we're going to break into you know, some of the names here, and I'm going to give you a program just on all the Arabic players, all the British players that are involved in this whole book. It says, neither Obed nor his son carried any food with them. The first stage of their journey was to Bir el-Sheka, where Ali said they might pause for a meal, about 60 miles away. No Arab thought of a journey such as a short distance required food, rest, or water. As for riding a camel, though it was not Lawrence's first attempt, he made no pretense of being a good or experienced rider. Unlike most Englishmen of his class and age, he was not an experienced horseman. His family's budget had not extended to riding lessons. He and his brothers had excelled at bicycling, not horsemanship. Nor had he ever covered this kind of distance on a finely bred camel which paced in long, undulating strides, while the rider sat erect in the saddle, with the right leg crooked over a saddle post and the left in the stirrup. 2 years of desk work in Cairo had not prepared Lawrence for the fatigue, the saddle sores on legs unused to riding, the backache, the suffocating heat, or the monotony of riding by night, often over rough ground. Sometimes he dozed off. Neither Obed nor his son was a talker, and woke with a start to find himself slipping sideways, saved from a fall only by grabbing the saddle post quickly. And so, you know, can you imagine you taking this young, and he was about 28 at the time, this young, blonde, blue-eyed British guy who was only 5'5", by the way, and then you take him and you put him in Middle Eastern clothing, you put him on a camel, and you tell him you're going 60 miles into the desert without food or water because you get it when you get there. Well, you know, I just noticed the time, and we are out of time for this program. So next time, I'll continue my discussion of Chapter 1. And remember, for this current series of programs, we're using Michael Korda's book, Hero, The Life and Legend of Lawrence of Arabia. You can buy this book at Amazon.com. You can find a used copy of the book at abebooks.com. And, of course, you can also check your local library. So once you get into this book, please write me any comments you may have to jbl@pcog.org. Remember, you can follow JBL on Twitter at JBLiterature1. You can also follow JBL on Facebook. Simply search for Just the Best Literature. So, until next time, keep reading.
You've been listening to Just the Best Literature on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, streaming online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com.